WildTalkRadio.com.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Pac with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday Night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
I've been dreaming on in my head like I've seen it. A life worth living is a life with meaning. I'll do what I love till my heart stops beating. I'm feeding this demon. Got a taste, can't erase bitterness in my face. Work a job every day till your dreams.
It's another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTR Live. I am the producer, Sir Rockin, joined as always by Keishi Matsunaga.
Yeah, let's talk wrestling and wrestling-related type of things.
Yeah.
That's what we do here, right?
That's what we do here, yeah. That is the thing. Speaking of the thing, it's the intern.
I hate you this week, Rock.
Why?
Because you made me have to do additional homework in addition to the homework I already normally have.
I mean, that's a you problem, not a me problem?
I don't know Japanese wrestling!
You learn it? You love it?
No, I'm not gonna love it, but I apparently learned something because I had to do it.
Let it ingest inside your soul?
No.
Be one with you? No? Okay.
No.
Okay, fine. Fine. But then there is Mr. Japanese Wrestling himself, the one and only, Tim Stein.
Konnichiwa! And that's about all I know. Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio Live. If you're listening anywhere else on the World Wide Web, join us at twitch.tv/WTR Live. We got a real-time chat room. We'll interact with you. If you post shit in there, we'll talk back. While we're talking on the air, we'll text. It's called multitasking. Look into it.
Yeah.
So that's the show for tonight. Thank you for tuning in.
Good night, everybody. Now, we got some stuff.
Wait a minute. No. We actually have to do shit here.
We actually have
I thought we met contractual obligations. That's all.
No. We actually have stuff we need to cover this week. Not a lot. It's a slow week, but we have some stuff that we need to talk about. There was a big story that happened on Wednesday. We're going to talk about that. But before
I just want to talk about that big story that happened on Wednesday. Congratulations, Keishi, for signing with New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I did what now?
Oh, wait. No, that's different news. That's fake news.
Ah.
Got it. But we have other things to get to before we talk about the big story of the week. But I want to know. But I want to know now. We're try this out. See how this works. New segment. MVP of the week. Brent, who was your MVP of the week and why?
I want to have two.
It's one. Just one. Just one.
No.
No. It's one solo single.
You can have co-MVPs.
No, we're not starting the first week with this new segment and doing co-MVPs. Nope.
Yes, one. We are. God damn it.
No, just one.
If I want to go with like most valuable overall slash like Impact, not wrestling Impact, but general Impact, I kind of got to go Theory. They've been pushing him for a while. He finally got that accolade that they were insinuating, you know, being Mr. McMahon's chosen one. He got to have a really good match with Balor, which, you know, not that difficult when Finn Balor's involved, because he can help elevate people. But at least, he put on a, trying to think of what I want to say here. Stop laughing, Rock, asshole. But no, honestly, like, Theory has, they've been wanting to kind of elevate him. He's now getting his chance. He's going to be a cocky son of a bitch with that belt. And I know some people are wanting to bitch and complain about the fact that, oh, Balor got buried. Oh, this wasn't much of a run. This was just a transitional change anyway, because they had to get the belt off of Damian so he could go be part of Edge's crew and take that next step in his elevation as well. So no, Balor didn't get buried. Besides, if what some people are hoping for happens, you could end up with, you know, the other side, as I call it, Edge and Damian Priest, going up against AJ Styles and possibly Finn Balor. And if people are going to bitch about that, turn off your damn TVs.
Okay.
Honorable mention goes to Kevin Owens.
We're not doing honorable mentions. I don't understand how you can't grasp this concept of just one person. Maybe
because I want to make your life difficult.
Maybe Casey will follow the rules.
I will. My MVP is Josh Alexander for having a banger of a match on Saturday against Moose and winning the Impact World Heavyweight Championship.
And getting to keep it this time.
Yeah. Also, what an adorable little kid.
I was going to ask, because I saw a clip
singlet.
Of the kid with the singlet.
Adorable.
That was great. I saw a clip of that online. That was really cool.
I do have a thing, but I'm not going to say it.
See? No. Put it out there, Casey. Do it.
Not honorable mention to Chelsea Green going through that table.
There!
I just wanted to mention it, because damn.
Saw that clip as well, yeah. She just got drilled through that table.
Oh, no, man.
Now, here's my question. Did she get hurt?
No, she survived. It seems
like anytime Chelsea Green is involved in any form of spot, she, like, breaks her wrist, sprains an ankle, does something like that.
I mean, she tweeted saying that she should have hit him with her strong hand.
So there you
when
go.
When she was smacking W. Morrissey. So I don't know. I feel like she's okay.
Good play there. Good play there.
So those are your MVPs of the week. Now we jump through the forbidden door. It was announced on Wednesday on Dynamite, where Tony Khan had another announcement for everyone. Huge, exciting news. AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling present a super show called The Forbidden Door in Chicago on June 26th.
And was interrupted twice in doing so.
He was, in fact, interrupted twice by doing so. Weird that they knew the announcement that he was going to make.
Yeah. Funny how those two people got involved.
Like, that pre-recorded video from Adam Cole was really, you know, he knew exactly what he was going to say. Anyway, is this a big deal?
Yes and no.
Explain yourself.
Is it a big deal that two major promotions are going to come together to put on a joint show? Yes. This is also kind of what happened with the original All In, was, okay, we're going to pull people from Ring of Honor. We're going to pull people from New Japan. We're going to try and get some of those fantasy matches together that people want to see and kind of served as the jump start of this. The problem is also, well, aside from the name, because if it's a forbidden door, it should not be, you know, continuously opened as much as it is. But as I just said before, we've seen a lot of people coming through from New Japan. We've seen this kind of interplay interaction. So it's not as big of a deal of, ooh, they're working together. It's like, yeah, they've already kind of been. And I mean, don't get me wrong, they're going to put together a lot of good matches, ones that we haven't seen yet. But for me, what this should be is this should be built up as AEW versus New Japan. These should be the two big faction. And I mean, not having like Wheeler Yuta technically is on both programs. What you end up doing is you having these people who are fighting.
Technically, isn't he on three?
Yes.
Continue.
Well, technically two of the programs are under one banner, so shut up. But it's just that kind of thing. Like, you've got, I mean, I went through the New Japan roster for part of this. And I keep looking, and it's like, oh, yeah, this guy's with AEW, this guy's with AEW, this guy. So you've got, like, a lot of people that are double-dipping, but what I want to see is that kind of real, I don't want to say, was it bragging rights?
Yeah, there's bragging rights, yeah.
But it's that ultimate kind of, like, for company pride.
Brand supremacy?
Thank you so much right now. But that kind of thing, like, put stakes on it. Don't have it just be like, oh, we're going to do this one-time show, and we're going to have all these great fantasy matches, and it's going to be so wonderful. And it's operating outside of the realm of what normally happens. It should be like, no, build up to it. Have this big card where a lot of stakes, you know, happen or are on the line, and so it means something. Because otherwise, it's just like, oh, really cool, you had a super show, and now it's over. Ah, screw it. You know, now we go back to our regular AEW storylines. It just feels so disjointed that way, but it seems like a lot of stuff they do sometimes is like, we're going to put together this super dream match, and it's over.
What do you think, Casey?
Anything that gets more eyes on New Japan is good in my books. I'm excited to see what they're going to do for matchups. And then once I see what those matchups are, then I'll decide how excited I am after the fact.
Because Casey, it's all about fantasy booking.
Yes, but it's not about fantasy believing.
Very true.
As two podcasters that I very much enjoy and listen to periodically state on a regular basis. Yeah, booking stuff is awesome. But I mean, just because we want to see something doesn't mean that they will give us what we want.
So what you're saying, this show needs actual substance?
Well, a show like this, which I mean, and based on the homework you gave us, the way I picked it, I don't know if you necessarily need a build up for anything. You can, because why not? Especially with the time that you have, you could build things. But from a perspective of me, who's probably a very odd minority wrestling fan who just likes to watch wrestling, I don't necessarily need it. I'm just excited to see matchups that hopefully have not happened before.
Okay. Tim, what do you think? Is this a big deal?
Well, potentially. Depends on what all of the follow-up is afterwards, actually, to tell you the truth. New Japan Pro Wrestling, for those die-hard North American fans, for them, it's a big deal promotion. Keishi, you watch it, don't you, when you get the chance?
I do. I am subscribed to New Japan World, and I watch it as much as I have time for.
And are you, like, a real big fan of New Japan?
I love watching New Japan wrestling.
Exactly. That's my point. The people who actually like to watch wrestling and not, you know, sports entertainment, but actual like wrestling, love New Japan. And how much exposure have they had? Like we're talking mainstream style exposure has New Japan had in North America?
A lot.
Eh.
No.
They've had exposure, but not mainstream style exposure.
I mean,
I would say in the last 5 years, they've had a lot.
They've had
more
a lot.
Than.
Yeah, I would say the fact that you can buy you can buy stuff at Hot Topic for New Japan Pro Wrestling, Bullet Club, was it Ignobles?
Los Ingrenables de Japón.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, having merchandise available there does not make you a mainstream thing.
They've been featured on AEW the last couple of years. They've been on Impact for the last couple of years. They have their own show on Access TV.
Mm-hmm.
So they have exposure here in the States.
They have exposure.
There's one more.
Continuing to work with AEW, AEW continues to grow.
There's also
the rub-off is exposure for New Japan continues to grow.
There's also New Japan, the U.S. touring group, too, as well. So there is exposure.
That's all fine and dandy. The point is, the more exposure they get, the better they're going to be. And competition is healthy in this business. The more competition you have, the more likely all of the different brands are actually going to start working their asses off at putting out something that people want to watch. We saw it happen with the Monday Night Wars. I have to admit that we're kind of sort of still waiting for it to happen with WWE today. some of the stuff WWE does is cringe. But
I think that goes for a lot of product in wrestling, though.
Yeah,
it's not just WWE. The
The only thing is that one seems the most glaringly obvious because it's the biggest company. It's been around, but.
And that's the one that everybody aspires to work for, despite all of the stories and rumors and whatever. It's a feather in your cap as a professional wrestler to say that you worked for WWE.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely still has that notoriety that it does, but I mean, with everything that's been happening over the last 5 years, you definitely have people who are like, well, that was the goal, but some people have, deviated from that because now there is an ability to become successful and not have to go and work there. That's not saying let's not go there, but, you know, like some people still have that dream. You see it now. There are a lot of, they're still signing talent. They're still signing great indie talent and athletes and stuff like that. And then on the other side of the table, there are people who are at one point, I'm sure we're all like, oh, I want to grow up and work for the WWE. And now they're like, well, I just want to grow up and I want to wrestle. And now I have options.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you've always got options. In today's world, those options are a lot better than they were like 15 years ago. WWE is still top of the mountain. Anyway, can they handle it correctly? Can they market it properly? Is it going to draw the type of crowd you hope that it draws? AEW is, you know, it's the up and comer and it's the feisty kid and all that other shit, but they're nowhere near as established as the WWE global marketing machine. So is it a big deal? Yeah. Is it a big deal? It can be. Is it a big deal? Well, not that big a deal.
Well, also, I think it depends on the group you're talking to when it comes to this. Because as we've talked about previously, AEW is very much appealing to their type of fan. We can see it in demographics. We can see it in a lot of metrics. They are appealing to a certain group, and that's it. And that group overlaps with the New Japan audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of New Japan fans. There's a lot of people that watch that product because when someone debuts, all they have to say is, oh, they're with New Japan. And the fans are like, yeah, we know. Like, Rocky Romero's here. Okay, yeah, we know who he is. But there's a very small group that goes, we have no clue what this is. And that, I think, is some of the problem is, again, they appeal very distinctly to their audience. But for the widespread, they don't do a very good job at explaining who people are, what backstories are, because they'll say, this person's a 15-year veteran. And other companies have that same kind of problem, too, at times, ignoring people's past. But do I think that this is going to, like, boon numbers for them? No, I think they're going to pull exactly what they do.
Yeah, 100%.
If they think this is going to be some super show that pulls in, you know, 3.5 million fans, this is going to be a wake-up call.
Yeah, I mean, unless they do some crazy sort of build up to the event, it's basically, yeah, it'll just be,
which will be hard because you have Double or Nothing right before this.
Yeah, so I mean, it'll probably look like a New Japan show from like 6 years ago, just in the United States.
And
the people who watch New Japan 6 years ago are currently watching AEW.
Yeah, they're the same people watching AEW. Yeah.
So you're gonna get, like, weirdly said, you're gonna get NJPW 6 years ago nostalgia fans
who were CM Punk fans who are still watching AEW, and here we are.
Yeah, but I mean, I watch all wrestling. I mean, probably for a different reason than most fans, so I guess it's hard for me to be like, well, I'm going to enjoy it, and I don't fall in that demographic. Well, no, I don't, but I also watch wrestling for a different reason. So as much as I like, oh, maybe they'll appeal to more of their niche audience, they might, but probably not the way that they're hoping.
Yeah, and I'll say, I don't think this is going to be a bad show.
I'm excited to see it, and I'll adjust that excitement based on the card.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, some people will just hear us saying this kind of thing and just be like, oh, you're crapping on the product. No. Do I think that there's going to be quality matches on here? I do. I just don't know, because people are going to come out and say this is the greatest card of all time. And part of me wants to be like, okay, number one, you're saying that before anything has ever happened. And two, they're going in with that mindset. So no matter what happens, it's, you know, it's the Meltzer syndrome of like, okay, yeah, everything's going to be 12 star because it involves New Japan. Although, as I joked in side conversations, it's probably going to get knocked down a star because it's not in Japan. But it's just that kind of thing of there are matches that I'm intrigued to see because honestly, I don't get to watch New Japan as much as other fans, you know, mostly because I'm sorry, time difference is a bitch. And I don't think I want to stay up till 3 a.m. to watch Okada wrestle.
You
and
mean stay up till 3 a.m. to start watching Okada wrestle?
Very, very true. Like I'm waking up and getting ready for work and it's just like, oh, Wrestle Kingdom just finished. And I'm like, Jesus. But at the same time, like I've seen a couple of people. I'm looking forward to seeing some others that I don't normally get to see. But also I'll admit New Japan sometimes is not the style or kind of the focus of wrestling I'm interested in, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I just like tags.
Well, you're not going to get that. But
God damn it!
But what do you think you're going to get? Give me two of the matches so far that you wrote down, Brian.
Oh, I wrote down more than two.
I said for now. We're going to give me two start with.
For now.
Yeah. I asked for five. I just want two right now.
I know. Like I said, this is coming from someone who doesn't have a lot of New Japan experience. So I had to kind of be like, what's this person want? And like do a little bit of like watching matches. But at least one I know they've already hinted at on AEW TV from a while ago. Moxley versus Tanahashi.
Okay.
They name dropped it. They wanted it. They were trying to bring Tanahashi over. It didn't work. But it's like that could be a good style matchup. If they don't do that, one I really want to see from what I've seen of their matches, I want to see Guerrillas of Destiny take on the Blackpool Combat Club.
Okay.
I want to see those four people just beat the ever-living hell out of each other.
So Yuta and Brian.
Well, no, I'm saying if Moxley Tanahashi doesn't happen.
Oh, so you booked Moxley in two matches already? Jesus. Okay.
No, right. No, I'm not booking him two matches. I'm saying I don't know if Tanahashi is a possibility. So if I can get Moxley Tanahashi, I'll go with that. And then I was going to put Brian and Sabre as the other one. But if they can't...
How many honorable mention matches did you come up with?
I didn't have honorable mentions. I just had a group. Brock, it's called contingencies.
Okay. All right. Fine.
But no, I believe you're detecting a pattern there, Brock.
But G.O.D. is the big tag team of New Japan. The BCC is two of the bigger names in AEW. They all can work a little snug if they need to and put together a really good match.
Okay. It's two matches for Moxley so far.
Shut up!
Tim, give me two matches.
Asshole. Well, would it not make sense to go champion versus champion?
It depends if one of their champions is available and not at his wife's birthday.
You know, never mind the wife's birthday thing.
And also, like, how long they want to argue about which champion is going to win.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Which world champion goes over? That's the feather in the cap of this thing.
Well, here's what's beauty about this. You throw Hangman Adam Page up against Okada, and Okada can win because it's not going to hurt Page to lose to Okada. He's pretty much looked at as one of the greatest wrestlers of his generation. Seriously.
That's saying Hangman makes it there as champion.
Provided he makes it there as champion.
Okay, that's one. Give me one more, Tim.
Thunder Rosa and how the fuck you pronounce his name? Siri?
I don't know.
Does Stardom count?
I was going to say, I don't think there are women wrestlers in New Japan, are there?
I didn't think
technically, New Japan owns Stardom, I think.
It's a technicality, I guess.
Technically, yeah.
See, at least my people were in the actual federations.
I just can't imagine this being the same type of wrestling event that Saudi a few years ago was, where there were no women on the card.
So you'll get your one women's match. Okay.
You're likely right. They will pull someone from Stardom in. I think they will.
Thank you for backing me up on that, Keishi.
I didn't choose any because I figured, well, it's Stardom, so they may not. But there's a there's a good chance they will have a women's match on the card.
So we got two from Tim. Can you give me a couple?
All right. I'm gonna preface all of my picks by a few things. One, I didn't put any champions against each other because I didn't want to have to worry about champion squabbles between companies. And number two, I also didn't pick anybody who already has either wrestled in AEW or New Japan lately. So no Moxley matches, no Suzuki matches, no Ishii matches, even though there were a couple of those that I wanted to put together. So the first one I decided to write down right away was FTR versus GOD. That would be a fun tag match to watch.
Oh my God, will you get out of my head?
I also picked Zack Sabre versus Danielson because why not? Who wouldn't want to see that?
Okay. Give me one more.
I also picked Samoa Joe versus Shingo Takagi because I love Shingo Takagi and I think him and Samoa Joe would have a banger.
All right, Tim, give me one more.
Well, I don't know why Keishi would pick FTR versus GOD.
He just said it would be a banger of a match.
Because I picked that as a matchup.
Okay, so there's that. Give me one more then, Tim.
I want to see CM Punk take on Kenta. And, you know, he's been calling him out on social media.
Is he still out with his hip injury? Am I asking the right people that question?
You're asking the wrong person. You're asking Tim.
Kenta suffered a hip injury.
Yeah, I know.
In January.
Yeah. I'm not sure what his status is. But he Twitter yells, so you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a
dude. Angry man yells at cloud kind of thing.
I think he should be okay for June.
It's like, I mean, this. Yeah, this card is not until June. So,
it's a hip injury. Those are not necessarily the.
Yeah, I know. It's not as bad as an Achilles, though. His injury is not as bad as an Achilles tear. Anyway, you stop and you think about it. It's the battle of the GTS.
Yeah.
You know, Punk stole it from Kenta and let them spend half the match trying to hit it on each other. That could be damned entertaining.
All right, Brent, give me one.
Okay, one.
Yes.
Evil versus Malakai Black.
I like it.
I figured Casey would appreciate that. A house of torture versus a house of black.
Okay.
And let them just beat each other up.
I think Tim has one more.
I do have one more. Oh, you want to know what it is?
Yeah, that I think you have one more.
Well, how about Will Ospreay versus Pac?
Okay.
Let them open it up and steal the entire fucking show right as the curtain jerkers.
Okay. All right. Brent, give me one more.
Okay, wait. I have a question for Casey first.
God.
Yo.
How would you define the style of Desperado?
He is a lucha style.
Is he a spot monkey?
I mean, if we're setting the level of spot monkey between like wrestling in 1970s versus the Young Bucks, I would say he probably fares somewhere in the middle. I mean, he has a lucha style, but I think his matches are well put together and they're not just a whole bunch of high spots.
Okay, so he does, but does he do anything crazy stupid in a match?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay, Desperado, Darby Allin.
That would be all right.
Winner gets the free trip to the hospital for checking.
Well, see, Desperado, I don't know if Desperado is like that, like Darby Allin level. Darby would have a crazier match with Hiromu because Hiromu wrestles in a way that he kind of like, very much like Darby Allin, where he does stuff and doesn't really worry about how it affects his body on a health-wise level.
All right, Keishi, give me whatever you had left on your list.
I threw in one of those big multi-man ones because I wanted to see the Dark Order versus Yano, Ryusuke Taguchi, Hiroki Goto, Taguchi's tag partner Wato, just because they're in the same unit. And then, depending on whether we went four or five, you could throw in a tiger mask, and the Dark Order members would be Uno and Grayson, Reynolds and Silver, and either Angels or 10. It didn't matter.
Well, put a six man on there. Just get the entire Dark Order into the match.
Well, see, they don't normally do six man tags. So I was kind of staying within the realm of how they did things. They usually do 4 or 5 is usually their max. But I mean, if you were going to do that, then you start looking at, I would add Kojima.
Okay.
And that would be a very much like the, like, just like a New Japan show, they always have their multi-mans in the beginning to fill out the card, and there'd be lots of comedy there. And I love me some comedy. I also left Colt Cabana out because he wrestled for New Japan and he's wrestled all of these people in the World Tag League. So
now the question is, who would be the New Japan equivalent to Hook?
The New Japan equivalent to Hook is,
there is no
Shibata.
There is no equal. It's Hook. Hook is above everything. He is the greatest of all time.
Shibata would be the closest to Hook, but Shibata is also old enough to be Hook's daddy.
He's Taz.
But he's like Japanese Taz.
Is he old enough to be Taz's daddy?
No.
Carry the one.
Older brother.
14, carry the 2. Uncle.
former rival.
Okay. Uncle Shibata, then.
Yes, Uncle Shibata.
Is that all you got?
No, I had a couple more, but.
Give me the last couple you got.
I put the Lucha Bros versus Bushi and Hiromu Takahashi from Los Ingobernables. Also from Los Ingobernables, Naito and Sonata versus Santana and Ortiz. And there was mention.
That one actually sounds good.
Yeah. I wanted to get Santana and Ortiz in a match for sure. And I thought Naito and Sonata would be a very good matchup for them. And then, as you mentioned in the chat about a match versus Sting, you could put him in with Tiger Mask.
Want Sting and Muda for this show because they're
yes,
going
but
to, they
Muda
want full nostalgia.
Muda isn't technically signed to New Japan, so you have
they have 2 months.
That's, I mean, he has done one-offs and you could probably bring him over, but it's,
wait,
I mean, Muda isn't good standing with all wrestling companies in Japan. Could they bring over Muta to wrestle Sting? Yes. But if Muda decided that he didn't want to and they wanted a pure New Japan, then you have to go with Tiger Mask.
No, wait, I've got one. You dust him off of mothballs, you pull him out of retirement, Sting Liger, that ultimate nostalgia match.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he'd be willing to do it, but I left him off of there because
he's retired.
He's retired.
I know, but then just think you could have Joker Sting versus whatever the dark side of
Liger. Oh, Kenshin Liger?
Yes.
Yes.
You get crazy ass Sting versus Dark Liger. And just
who likes to attempt to stab people with shivs.
Exactly. this is what's wrong when I get to fantasy book. This is why Jobber and I do not talk much, because we come up with these crazy ass ideas.
Just don't fantasy believe.
All right, Brent, what else did you have?
Let's see. I had, well, he isn't being used right now, but you could always, you know, find something for him to do. You could do Miro versus Jeff Cobb. Have a big beefy hoss fight.
Yeah, I mean, I left Cobb out because he wrestled for AEW already, but that would
he
be...
He wrestled for 1 week!
Still there. He appeared.
I know, but...
They could have, at that time, they could have put him up against anybody.
But, yeah, just having those the two hosses go against each other. And then, of course, I had the... This is probably all building towards as their main event. Golden Elite versus the Undisputed Switchblades.
What? Golden Elite versus
what's
Undisputed
Golden Elite?
What?
That would be, you have the Bucks and Omega, or returning Omega, going up against, and if you need to, you pull in Okada for that, going up against Cole, Red Dragon, and Jay White.
Oh, Undisputed Elite. Okay.
Undisputed Elite.
I was trying to figure out what you were.
That's why. I was throwing Switchblades on because I was like, okay, if you pull in the extra one, because they would run 4 on the Cole side. So I'm like, I need the 4 there. Well, you throw Okada with Omega there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or if he's
out.
If he's no longer injured, you could bring in Ibushi.
Yeah, Ibushi, Omega, and the Bucks going up again. And with me, it's like that could be the one. That could be a storyline that, you know, carries and makes this card seem, you know, important because it's been building for a while on the shows and everything, and you tie in the New Japan with AEW that way.
Okay, anything else?
That was, well, I mean, technically I had like 7 matches and I basically named them, or they have already been named.
Okay, just want to make sure we covered it all.
I understand, I'm just saying.
Right, that being said, The internet says that Ibushi is sitting around 70 to 80%.
Yeah, it's only 2 months, so.
And what was it, a dislocated shoulder?
Some sort of shoulder injury, yeah.
Okay.
And Kenta was dislocated hip, so who knows.
Ooh.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll give you, we'll keep you updated on how things progress. Switching gears, tomorrow night on Raw, they're celebrating 20 years of Randy Orton. Brent, what's a favorite memory and moment that you have of Randall?
Part of me always goes to the Legacy versus McMahon storyline.
Okay.
When he was taking out
everybody.
Yeah, he was, you know, he took out Vince with the punt, and then he took out Shane, and he was battling Hunter, and he did the, like, handcuff Hunter to the ropes and did the DDT to Steph and then kissed her, which mm-hmm. was really awkward. But then you had that ultimate moment when Randy's delivering the promo in the ring a couple of weeks later, and then you get Vince walking out, and then Shane walking out, and then Hunter walking out, and like everyone just knows, oh, shit's going down. It's like that storyline was always kind of intriguing for me with Randy, because it was also like when he was trying to be some of his most sadistic.
Mm-hmm.
Another moment, of course, is when he, I'm sorry for saying this out loud, and he joined the family.
What family? What family are you talking about? You gotta refresh my memory.
See, he joined a certain psychopathic backwoods family, and even though some will say he was never fully joined.
There it is.
There we go. There you go. But no, like, honestly, like, the fact that you had the crazy Wyatt family, and then they bring on, like, this utter sociopath in Randy Orton, and what happened with the kind of dynamics there, the fact that, you know, he, like, sacrificed, I can't remember, was it he sacrificed for Bray to win the Rumble, or was it Bray sacrificed himself to win, or for Randy to win?
Or Randy won the Rumble.
But it was, like, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, unfortunately, the Mania match with them was not the greatest. The superimposed mat is still an interesting sight to see.
It is. It is. I watched it back last month or so, yeah.
But it was, like, just that kind of overall story arc with Bray winning at Elimination Chamber, which I got to see live, and those, you know, just all of that with Randy and him setting fire to the compound, and just the kind of mental battles that he was having with Bray at the time was a good moment. And then, of course, there was always the RKO from, you know, 14 stories up that he gave Seth Rollins at WrestleMania.
Okay, Casey, what about you?
I'm mirroring the storyline with Legacy versus the McMahons. That was, as soon as you asked, that was the first thing that popped into my head.
Okay.
Just, yeah, like, it was just like each one came out, like, it just started with, like, Vince, and they took out Vince, and then Shane came out, and he took out Shane, and then Stephanie came out, and he just instinctively RKO'd Stephanie, and then after was just like, oh no. And that brought back Triple H. That was great. I thought that was very well done. A very more subtle, but thing that stands out very much in my brain is that one time when he backdropped one of the Bollywood boys onto the announce table and dumped him right on his head. And just the look that he had after he did it. The like, oh no. I done it. I did it bad.
That was the most, like, authentic reaction of, like, oh, shit.
Yeah. It's, I mean, and that's the thing, like, because it's very cool to see his progression over his time from, like, his debut and where he was then till his, like, era of, like, just the shortest fuse on the planet and just freaking out in the middle of his matches to, like, Randy Orton now, and just the, like, facial expressions he has when he, like, does things like that. You just, you know that he kind of, it's neat to see the progression of a wrestler like that, to go from, like, a rookie who kind of knows what he's doing because he grew up in the business, and then just that progression of, like, development and becoming a guy who's just fully embraced, like, what wrestling is as a whole. And is just embracing, like, oh, it can be competitive, but we can also have a good time and do some goofy shit.
Well, and Rock has said this before. His pairing with Riddle is the absolute most fun he is having in his career.
100%.
because he's just put with this complete meathead who can be the, you know, who can just do the most off the wall kind of thing. And Randy can be the straight man and just no sell it and get a great reaction. Or B, like when Riddle hits the off the top rope RKO and you see Randy just lose his shit. That's authentic because it's just he can appreciate that kind of thing and be like, yes.
Yep. And it's good to see because 10 years ago, he might have been pissed.
Yeah.
Well, his whole thing was being, you know, the legend killer and that kind of thing. So, yeah, he couldn't have a reaction. Or if he did, it would have to be anger. It's like now he gets to live it a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, what about you?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Because all I heard was, all right, what about you? And I'm like, huh?
I said, what about you, Tim? That was the full statement.
Well, one of the biggest memories I have of Randy's career is not something that's a favorite memory. It was an almost tragedy, actually. I can't remember the event. I can't remember what the match was, but Randy was in a steel cage match with it was was it a Hell in the Cell match or something? But there were more than two people in this match. And there was a cage around the ring. No DQ, none of that nonsense. Somebody had brought in a wooden table. If I remember correctly, it was a wooden table. The thing got broken. One of the legs was sheared off. So the top, like the one part of it was like a spear point. And the thing got flipped upside down, so that busted up table leg was pointing straight up in the middle of the match. And Randy takes a bump outside the ring, and he's about to finish selling the bump when he goes to slam himself down on the mat. There's the table leg, and he came within inches of impaling himself on it and yells out a great big huge fuck. I remember watching that. That sticks in my head. The entire details of everything else doesn't stick in my head. He could have been very, very gravely injured on live TV. And that's one thing that sticks in my head. Another one is he's the champion, wins the title, and Evolution turns on him. That was a big storyline.
Yeah, it was a defining moment of his career for sure.
Absolutely. But with Randy, so many goddamn things over 20 years. The one thing that you will never forget is the RKO out of nowhere.
Okay.
I just thought of two more.
Hold on. So it involves Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. Tim.
Oh, it was with Rollins and Ambrose?
It was with Rollins and Ambrose. Don't have any more details about it. I'm reading a post on Reddit from 8 years ago.
Okay.
So anyway, continue, Brent.
Yeah. Did it say anything about like what the style of the match was or anything?
No.
Like a triple threat?
The post goes, Randy Orton, after Ambrose dodges clothesline, Orton went to over the top rope, had Rollins thrown onto him. He meant to fall to his right, but the broken table was still there from earlier. Table legs pointed up, and he almost fell right onto it. He managed to grab onto it and dodge it, but fuck, he could have been impaled right there.
Yeah, that could have been the end of Randy Orton on live television.
Yeah. Trying to find out more of the details.
Thank you very much for doing your investigative in-depth digging.
Yeah, you gave no real specifics, so I'm trying.
I gave as many as I can remember. All I remember is he almost fucking stabbed himself in the heart with the busted table leg.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a multiple-man match. But, yeah.
All right, really quick.
I just thought of two other moments real quick. During the whole legend killer gimmick, when he was being celebrated in the ring by, I believe, the SmackDown heel roster. Like, they were holding him up on his shoulders and celebrating his win, and they brought Taker back in the utter sell job that Orton did in that spot. Because you had young Orton sitting there celebrating. It was either a title win or just, like, a big victory. And everyone's holding him up, and it's going great, and all of a sudden, like, the music hits, and the druids come out with the casket, and Orton's still on their shoulders, and he's just screaming, like, put me down! Put me down! Put me down! And the lightning strikes the casket, it blows open, Taker comes out, and then just lays waste to everybody in the ring while Orton runs away.
Wasn't that, a few months after one of Taker's Buried Alive matches, where he took some time off?
I don't think it was Buried Alive. I think it was Orton had put him in a casket and lit it on fire.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one.
And Taker disappeared and then came back to get his ungodly vengeance upon him. And then the other one, to highlight Randy's sadistic nature, all I need to do is say two phrases. Jeff Hardy, screwdriver. That Hell in a Cell match and then subsequent match when he would, like, finger into the gauge hole, which are things we never thought we'd say on wrestling radio or commentary, and would either yank on the hole or, like, put the screwdriver in and turn it. Randy's into some kinky stuff.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you revisiting it. Because, man, that was wild.
But just remember, like, in the match, you saw it and you were like, what the hell? Because, like, you know Jeff has gauges in there. But, again, it's that kind of thing, like, why did no one think of this? It's like in the Hunter-Batista match where Hunter took the pliers and ripped the nose ring out of Batista. It's like, why don't people do that more often? It's going to hurt like hell. It's going to work.
Okay, so the details are it was John Cena and Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins, Kane, and Randy Orton in a 3-on-2 handicap street fight, but they had the cell. So they lowered the cell. That was the match Tim was talking about.
That's okay.
And I posted the clip in our group chat. So
apparently my browser's not working.
Okay. So there was that. That was the thing.
He put his hands up real quick onto that table leg.
Yeah.
Like that was literally, seriously, the scariest thing I have ever seen on live TV. That at the time, you know, you knew was a scary thing. I mean, you saw Austin get powerbombed, but you didn't realize because you didn't see how bad it was until they started showing the replays later.
All right, so there was that. That's Randy. Let's get it really quick. Some all-time greatest.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
It's time for another WTR original.
I am the greatest.
All-time greatest.
Well, whoop the freaking do!
Help us decide what the greatest intro, submission move, or even the greatest title run ever truly is.
I hope I score.
Interact with us in the real-time chat and find out who or what will end up being the all-time greatest.
Stop us now! Kicking off round number 2. Shawn Michaels, Jay Lethal, Brent.
John, sorry. When I see this matchup, it's just Jay Lethal's run as a face, especially when he was doing like Black Machismo or counteracting Ric Flair and Impact, was funny. I'll give him that. But it just feels like sometimes there's something lacking with Jay Lethal. Shawn Michaels as a face is freaking amazing. He kicks Stan, him with DX, like whenever he's paired with Hunter, and they're just able to just kind of just go, is amazing. And honestly, aside from the Rockers, the first time Shawn really went face, I don't know if he was supposed to be face, but they happened to market him as such when it was the Boyhood Dream. And I understand it wasn't like a full face turn, but going into that match, you were rooting for him.
Well, he was face because he was turned on by everybody.
Right, but I mean, he was still the...
Still cocky.
He was kind of a... Yeah, he was still very cocky. He was still kind of, you know, a dick. But it was like, you really got behind him because of, you know, Jose Lothario and the Boyhood Dream. And then coming down from the rafters on the goddamn zip line. But even still, like, when Shawn wants to be face, he can rally everyone behind him so easily. Mm-hmm. It just works. So in this case, I've got to go Shawn.
Casey?
Shawn Michaels for sure. All of the beats that were hit on Jay Lethal, 100% true. His Black Machismo, that Ric Flair off with Ric Flair in TNA was magic. But Shawn Michaels as a face just has that longevity as a face that I don't think, when you compare these two together, I don't think it's there for Jay Lethal.
Tim?
Yeah, in comparison, Shawn Michaels is the bigger deal than Jay Lethal. Everything Jay Lethal did, like you said, Cash, it was just absolutely great. Like, how could you hate Black Machismo, right? But, Shawn both before and after his break, if you will, had the ability to come off as a cocky SOB. The difference between the two eras of Shawn Michaels is before the break, he was an arrogant little son of a bitch. And after he returned, he only played one whenever he wound up doing the heel stuff. But especially after coming back and being the crowd favorite, everybody behind him for kicking the habit and rehabbing and finding God and being in a good place in his life finally. Just he fed off of all of that. Yeah, it was his doing, but the support and encouragement and appreciation for what he did by the fans, it's like self-perpetuating. And it just became exponentially bigger as one of the greatest comeback stories of all time.
Okay. We got Mankind taking on Steve Austin. Casey.
Ooh.
Have a nice day.
Yeah. As much of a fan favorite that Steve Austin was during Steve Austin's run as a quote unquote babyface, he was not your typical babyface. He was a guy you could get behind, but he was just a badass at the same time. An anti-hero, or however people characterize Stone Cold Steve Austin as a face. Mankind, when he was a face, he was definitely an underdog. Like, Vince McMahon picked on him. WCW thought him winning the title was not going to be as big of a deal as it was. But all it did was drive people to change the channel and watch Mankind McFoley win the title.
And effectively end the Monday Night War.
You ever made.
Yeah. And, I mean, just like Mankind just trying to be a good person and like just that being what everybody who was a heel around him took advantage of. Like Vince McMahon took advantage of him that way because he's Mankind and he's nice and I can do whatever and he'll believe me. He'll believe anything I say. I can pick on him. That really, like, I think it got people behind him in a way that I don't think they could get behind Steve Austin as a good guy. Steve Austin is the guy that everybody wants to be as far as doing whatever they want, sticking it to the man. Whereas Mankind, for a lot of people, that is how they felt a lot of the time, being bullied, being picked on, trying to be the nice guy and ending up getting screwed over for it. So, I mean, as over as Steve Austin is, I'm going to pick Mankind as the babyface.
Brent.
For me, this one's hard because when it comes to Mankind, as much as I have to balance, or as much as there's the reaction for him winning the title and like the times where, you know, going to visit Mr. McMahon in the hospital and the first introduction of Mr. Sacco before, you know, the bedpan incident, that before the Rock and Sock connection and, you know, the fun that was, I have to balance out Mankind almost with those times that he's heel in like attacking JR in the interview and just how crazy he came across with that. The battles with Taker. So it's like with Mankind, I'm dealing with the kind of juxtaposition, and I'm not even talking about the split personality disorder that is the other sections of him. But to me, if we're talking like ultimate babyface, all I really have to do for my pick is point to WrestleMania 38 and the second the glass hit on either day and the reaction that was Steve Austin. The fans, you know, went absolutely apeshit. They bought in completely with the Kevin Owens match. They wanted to see McMahon very shittily sell the stunner that he did on Sunday night. You know, McAfee was the embodiment of every fan in that moment he had with Steve Austin, being able, you know, yeah, share some drinks with Steve and then eat a stunner. Like, that just, as much as the Mania match, I think, was there for Pat, I think that moment alone made Pat's career, personally.
Surely so, made his night.
Oh, yeah. And then the subsequent beer drink on the floor, priceless.
Which is now a permanent gift. Yep.
Yeah, but I just have to say, like, if we're going for, like, all-time babyface, it's just the reaction, the utter fan support, and just for years, as much as it's Mankind, like, embodied the underdog, Steve Austin embodied an entire culture with going against the boss and doing what everyone, absolutely everyone, wishes they could at one point or another.
So you're Austin.
I'm going to go Austin on this. Tim? So Tim gets to break the tie.
Yeah.
Well, you know, going against the boss is not a very fun thing to do when you're self-employed. Just saying. Keishi?
Yes.
I just wondering, do you like sneak into my place when I'm not home and read my notes?
I'll never tell.
Because so much of the shit you said about Mankind, I was going to say, and now it looks like I'm stealing from you, you bastard.
I don't know what to tell you. If it makes you feel any better, it was all off the top of my head.
There you go. But yeah, no, Mankind's underdog run. It's probably just about the most successful underdog run WWFE ever gave a character. Seriously. I mean, it to the point where, you know, they announce it on WCW, don't waste your time. And sure enough, they lose 75% of the audience because they wanted to go and see this. I mean, that's absolutely fucking huge. Yeah, he was a great underdog as a babyface. Was he a great babyface? Yeah. I don't know that the character Mankind ever should have been put into that position. It's just another case of mismanaging a character. However, they did it successfully enough to the point that it worked. And what they did was over in a big, bad way. But speaking about over, again, Steve Austin, was he ever actually really a baby face? I've been saying it this entire thing all the way through round one. He's on a completely different level. Austin, more of a tweener than a baby face or a heel. But the character, Stone Cold Steve Austin, is got to be the most over professional wrestler in WWE history. Seriously. His merchandise is still outselling almost everybody else active on the roster. And he's, you know, been retired for 20 fucking years. Just with people so totally losing their shit and being behind everything Austin did, this is going to him. My pick.
Nothing wrong with that.
Why, thank you, sir.
And with that, I say we're done.
That's it. That's all she wrote. Hey, you know what's happening next week, Keishi?
It's the end of the month.
Okay.
And
you know what else?
Of a new month.
Do you know what else is happening next week, Brent?
No.
Brock, you know what's happening next Sunday night.
Yeah, a show where we preview WrestleMania Backlash.
That's exactly correct. We're going to be doing that and playing Pick'em, so we want you all to tell your friends and get everybody in the chat room here. Isn't that right, Rock?
Yeah.
He said,
but if all my friends are already here,
then you need more.
It's Tim cut out. Anyway, tomorrow night. Every Monday night, it's the Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. The Rack is live Thursday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. Tim would do a whole long spiel. We're just going to get through it. The Rack is live Thursday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. You can check out Lindsay on Twitch, twitch.tv/LindsayWard. She streams Genshin Impact Monday through Wednesday and on the weekends. Her VODs are available at LindsayWard.RackRadioShow.com. Saturday night, midnight-ish, it's CB Radio. Someone's birthday on Saturday, so we're going to celebrate that. Plus Fortnite with friends right beforehand. It's CB Radio Saturday nights, midnight-ish, and Fortnite around 10 p.m.-ish. As Tim mentioned,
whose birthday is it?
You'll have to tune in and find out.
I know whose birthday it is.
Do you?
Yep.
Okay. We'll be back next Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, to preview WrestleMania Backlash. It's at WTR Sunday Night on Facebook and Twitter. It's at Wild Talk Radio. It's facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network. Tim?
Did you finally see the Batman?
No.
Oh.
I saw the Spider-Man. New one.
Oh, the No Way Home one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Casey, did you see the Batman?
I did. I watched it this week.
The only I saw it too. The only thing I will say about it is, first off, what's his name? Does not make a good Bruce Wayne, but he makes a great Batman. And also, the movie was probably maybe half hour too long.
That's fair. I mean, I watching it and how long the runtime was, after the fact, I was like, well, it didn't feel like the runtime. But, I mean, if they shaved off 30 minutes, it probably wouldn't be bad.
Well, by the time they got to Madison Cube Garden, it started feeling like it had been definitely a full movie for me. So,
yeah.
But I'm not going to give any spoilers out or anything like that. Do we want to spoil Spider-Man?
No,
because I've been out for
3 months.
Tim, let's do plugs. How about let's do plugs? Where are you on Twitter?
Well, yeah, I can do plugs. I was just talking about that for, you know, an aside. Anyway, you can find out more about what I think about all of these movies and all these other things if you follow me at Flames Forums.
Casey, you're on Twitter and you have a Redbubble and everything. Tell us about it.
He's got a Redbubble.
Boy, do I. I am on both Twitter and Instagram at Kyle Driver. Also, links to my Redbubble, which is basically an online merchandise website similar to Pro Wrestling Tees, but if you live in countries like Canada, the shipping is cheaper. So links to that are on the bios of both my Twitter and my Instagram. Feel free to peruse, and if you so choose, pick something up, and I appreciate it.
That rhymed.
Yeah, I tried.
Brent?
Yeah, you can find me making friends on Twitter at King Kittens.
I got
typically on
friends.
Wednesday nights.
Nice.
Where he fantasy books and fantasy believes.
No, that's Saturday night.
That's Saturday. Anyway, make sure you use credit card Rock Second Fortnite Item Shop because of hashtag Epic Partner. Use the Amazon Prime things here. Do the thing. Click the button. You know the deal. Tim, say goodnight.
Good night.
WildTalkRadio.com.